Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from the proponents of a ballot measure that will be on the statewide ballot in November. Opponents of the efforts to reintroduce grey wolves say the ballot measure should be withdrawn because there have been some recent wolf sightings. Well, hear exactly what those wolf sightings are and how it might impact or may not impact the upcoming ballot. After that, we'll hear about sustainability in the arts and how artists are responding to the current Black Lives Matter anti-racism protests as well as the COVID-19 pandemic. This is ahead of a series of webinars being hosted by local arts organisations. We'll hear from you, the listener, on the comment line before the bottom of the hour when we'll go back to the BBC for headlines. Then it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, we'll hear from Tyler Lyson, who's a vertebrate paleontologist with the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. He recently discovered important fossils from the beginning of the Age of Mammals at the Coral Bluffs, which are located east of Colorado Springs. We'll hear how they hold an exceptional fossil record of the time interval right after the asteroid impact wiped out the dinosaurs and ended the age of reptiles. That's coming up on How on Earth. Then at 9 o'clock, it is the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, rounding out this morning's News and Public Affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Ballots in the primary election must be turned in by 7 p.m. this evening. Voters who are registered with a specific party can vote on who will represent their party in each race in the general election, which takes place on November 3rd. Unaffiliated voters may choose to vote either a Democratic or a Republican ballot, but they cannot vote in both elections. Statewide, registered Democrats are choosing between former Speaker of the House Andrew Romanoff and former Governor John Hickenlooper in the race to decide who will face Cory Gardner in the Senate race in November. Several Indigenous women have recently written a letter to John Hickenlooper calling on him to drop out of the race. In the letter published on Sunday on Medium.com, the women referred to pictures that have emerged on social media of Hickenlooper dressed in Native American headdress at an event called the One Shot Antelope Hunt. That's an event that the women say brings mostly elite white men together to compete to see who can kill the most antelope with one shot. Hickenlooper participated in the event in Wyoming multiple times when he was governor. The winner of the event is dressed in a costume headdress, while the loser of the event is dressed in what the event attendees call a squaw. And the women say that's a misogynistic ethnic slur for North American Indian women. The letter says that Hickenlooper displayed an unacceptable lack of judgment in choosing to participate in the event while disrespecting Indigenous women and appropriating traditional dress of native peoples. They say that throughout the history of colonization, these tropes have been weaponized to subject Indigenous women to sexual violence and dehumanization. One of the women who signed the letter is Tara Huska, who's the co-founder of the nonprofit Not Your Mascots. On Sunday, Huska tweeted to John Hickenlooper, friend of the oil and gas industry, vehemently opposed by Indigenous land defenders, participates in a hunt where winners don headdresses and losers dress as squaws. Ever heard of hashtag MMIW? Why are Dems endorsing this guy? The tweet tagged Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker, who have endorsed Hickenlooper. The hashtag MMIW refers to the missing and murdered Indigenous women. It's a reference to the disproportionate violence experienced by Indigenous women. Hickenlooper's candidacy in the primary has also drawn criticism from environmental groups who point to his record as governor when he brought lawsuits against different communities in the state who were trying to enact local control over fracking. You can listen to and watch a debate between Romanoff and Hickenlooper that we broadcast at KGNU. That's at kgnu.org. There you can also listen to a debate that we hosted between the two candidates in the Boulder County Commissioner Democratic primary as well. That's Martha Luachmin and Jonathan Singer. It's online at kgnu.org. Once again, ballots must be returned by 7 p.m. this evening. Several Aurora police officers have been placed on leave pending an investigation into photographs believed to have been taken close to where Elijah McLean was stopped last August. McLean died after police administered a chokehold and injected him with ketamine. According to a statement published Monday evening on the Aurora police blog, Interim Chief of Police Vanessa Wilson was apprised of allegations that were reported to Internal Affairs by an Aurora police officer that allege multiple Aurora police officers were depicted in photographs near the site where Elijah McLean died. The statement said that all involved officers were immediately placed on administrative leave with pay in non-enforcement capacities. Vanessa Wilson has also defended the actions of police on Saturday that took place at a vigil for Elijah McLean. Police used pepper spray on people in an effort to disperse a crowd that was attending a rally and a violin vigil in honour of Elijah McLean. Police tweeted on Saturday that some protesters threw rocks and bottles at officers, which led to the police using an order to disperse and using pepper spray. Mayor Mike Kaufman has called for a special Aurora City Council meeting today to question the police department's response to the rallies over the weekend. The Colorado Supreme Court has upheld the state's ban on large capacity gun magazines. In its decision on Monday, the court says limiting magazines to 15 rounds does not violate people's right to defend themselves under the state's constitution. The law dates back to 2013, the year after the Aurora Theatre shooting, and it was part of an effort to limit the number of deaths in mass shootings. The court concluded that the law was a reasonable exercise of the state's police power. Governor Jared Polis yesterday signed into law a bill that allows him to mass pardon Coloradoans with minor marijuana possession convictions. House Bill 1424 was passed on the last day of the 2020 legislative session. It also aims to make the legal marijuana industry more accessible to people who have prior minor marijuana convictions. Representative James Coleman, a Democrat from Denver and the sponsor of the bill, said at the signing ceremony that the bill is aimed at levelling the playing field, and it acknowledges that the black community has been disproportionately criminalised because of marijuana, while others have profited. Denver City Council on Monday cancelled its scheduled in-person meeting, citing concerns over COVID-19 and the large crowds that have attended the last two meetings. That didn't stop members of the public from having their own meeting at City Hall. The Denverite reports that around 200 people held their own meeting on the steps of City Hall. These included members of the Afro Liberation Front, the Party for Socialism, and others who were upset by systemic racism and police violence against people of colour. Those who spoke called for the police department to be abolished, and they demanded an end to police patrols and the right for all city employees to collectively bargain like the Denver Police Department can. And in the weather today, expect highs close to 80 degrees, mostly sunny but breezy conditions as well. Overnight, that breeze staying with us, mostly clear. Overnight lows in the low 50s. Warmer tomorrow. Wednesday, highs in the mid 80s. It is 14 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Opponents of a ballot measure that will be in front of Colorado voters in November say that the proponents should withdraw it. The ballot measure would see grey wolves reintroduced into the state, but opponents say that now there have been recent wolf sightings and therefore there's no need for a reintroduction programme. I spoke with Rob Edward with Rocky Mountain Wolf Action Fund, the group behind the ballot measure.
So there have been wolves coming to Colorado for 25 years now, at least, from the reintroduced population in Yellowstone. But they're individuals that make a very treacherous journey from southern Yellowstone to northern Colorado. And that sort of visitation will never, in any time that matters, result in a restored population, a viable, self-sustaining population of wolves in Colorado. And you have to look at where the calls for us to take the ballot measure off the ballot are coming from. They're coming from the livestock industry. And they're not coming from the scientists and wolf biologists who have said that Colorado is the last best place for wolves. The world's best wolf biologists still believe that the only way we will have a self-sustaining wolf population in Colorado in our lifetime is through reintroduction. The other interesting thing is that prior to 2019, when we started gathering signatures for the ballot, very little was really ever said in the media by the state game management agency about the various reports of potential wolf sightings throughout northern Colorado. Occasionally they might say something, but usually it wasn't pressworthy to them. Suddenly every single report is pressworthy. And so what we get is this round of media coverage a couple of weeks ago coming out of the state game management agency that makes it appear as if, number one, there's a pack of wolves in northwestern Colorado. Nobody's seen these 4 to 6 individual animals that were seen together back in back in January of 2020. Since January, nobody has seen them. They were in the far northwestern part of the state. They may well have just moved back into northeastern Utah or back into Wyoming, for all we know. Nobody has seen them. And when you have a group of wolves, usually you're going to get reports of them from time to time every month if people are seeing them. And wolves aren't that shy. They are, you know, shy, but they're not that shy. If they're out there hunting, people are going to see them. So we have doubts that those wolves are still here. Even if they were, the genetic information that the Department of Wildlife got back indicates that they are, at least some of them are siblings. We don't want that to be the founding population of wolves in Colorado. And even if they weren't all related, it wouldn't matter, because really that's just not enough wolves to seed a population recovery.
Well, take us through exactly what the ballot measure is all about, so people really get a sense of what will be on the November ballot when it comes to wolf reintroduction.
The ballot measure simply says, yes or no, do you as a voter believe that the Colorado Game Management Agency, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Department, should begin a planning process involving the public, taking about 3.5 years to complete, that puts the best available science forward for reintroducing wolves to western Colorado and results in paws on the ground by the end of 2023, beginning of 2024. And as part of that, that any losses experienced thereafter to wolves would be compensated at fair market value. It's that simple.
Why is this something you're passionate about? Because I know you've been working around this issue for many years, not just you, of course, and your organization, but many other wildlife organizations as well.
Because it is critically important to the long-term health of the not only Colorado's wild places, but the entire Rocky Mountain ecosystem that stretches from the high Arctic all the way to the borderlands of Mexico. Wolves are the engine of evolution. Wolves are the traffic cops. All of the big grazing animals, wild grazing animals that are out on our public lands, and by the way, 70%+ of Western Colorado belongs to the American public. All of those grazing animals evolved with wolves as their top level carnivore. And wolves, unlike all other carnivores that are out there today, hunt in a way that keeps their prey moving around. And that is the key. Keeping those big grazing mammals moving around on the landscape rather than browsing everything down to the ground is important to beaver. It's important to songbirds and a whole host of plants and other animals that rely on healthy, robust, diverse habitat. Biodiversity is impoverished in the absence of gray wolves in North America.
Is Colorado, though, gone beyond the point of return when it comes to development and our loss of lands?
Absolutely not. Because, as I mentioned a minute ago, well over 70% of the western part of Colorado belongs to the American public as Forest Service land, BLM land, National Park Service land. Those lands are never going to be developed, per se. There are no, there may be some oil wells out on BLM land, but overall, it's not developed land. There's not going to be shopping malls and 6 tons of roads and everything else. There will be recreation. There's recreation in Yellowstone. Millions of people go to Yellowstone every year. And yet the wolves live in the Lamar Valley and do their business in the Lamar and Pelican Valleys every year in the face of far more traffic than they're going to experience dispersed throughout Western Colorado.
Now, you submitted your signatures and enough signatures to qualify for the ballot before the pandemic, because that's really impacting other efforts to get initiatives on it on the 2020 ballot. But will it impact your campaign in any way, the fact that we are in a pandemic?
Certainly, Maeve. It certainly impacted our campaign already undercutting our funding base. I mean, it's very hard to raise money right now. You know, this is an audacious campaign that gives people the chance to vote for something that's an act of hope for the future. And all we can do is continue to offer that hope and hope that people, not only in Colorado, but around the world, will step up and, you know, throw down $10 or $50 or $100 to help make this happen. We know our opposition is suffering funding problems as well, but you know they're definitely funded by the big ag industry, so they've got a head start.
That's Rob Edward. He's with the Rocky Mountain Wolf Action Fund. They are the proponents of the statewide ballot measure that will be on the statewide ballot this November around the reintroduction of great wolves. Now, there's a primary election still ahead, and primary ballots must be returned by 7 p.m. this evening. And we'll have all the local results on tomorrow's Morning Magazine. Well, how are artists responding to what's happening right now in the world, whether it's a COVID-19 crisis or the recent Black Lives Matter protests? There will be some webinars on sustainability and the arts and how they are responding right now. They're happening this evening and next Tuesday, and it's in conjunction with the Boulder County Arts Alliance in collaboration with Eco Arts Connections and the Arbor Institute. They're going to be presented by Ian Garrett, who is the Associate Professor of Ecological Design for Performance at York University. He's also the director of the Center for Sustainable Practice in the Arts. That's a think tank in the US on sustainability in arts and culture. I asked him how the arts are responding to current events.
Seeing that especially a lot of the justice issues, both Indigenous and Black Lives Matter topics that have also arisen out of this, with the work that we do with this CSBA, we're invested in what's referred to as the nested model of sustainability, which sort of places everything within the environment. So many of these issues do have ties upwards towards environmental issues, and there's a very strong eco-justice aspect that happens with those as well. And all of these exist within these, you know, fraught moments of, you know, society being upturned by the current COVID crisis as well. Within specifically this sort of pandemic scenario that we find ourselves in. You know, we've seen a lot of people moving towards telecommunications as their primary ways of communicating. We've seen work disrupted that way. We're seeing people trying to respond as quickly as possible within artistic practice as well. It's been very interesting as someone who is tied to performance disciplines, where those are not necessarily, like, they just can't happen right now. And they're going to be one of the last things to come back as well. So this has been a deep conversation around what exactly is the future of that industry to begin with. Part of the area, one of the areas where I've had hope is that, you know, people are willing to, the artists want to make, so that they are looking for different ways to talk about the experience they're having in this moment, to talk about and provide room for others to have these shared experiences, and moving that into various types of virtual spaces. We've seen that range from, you know, Zoom performance to there was recently, this last week, a production that I was involved with that involved a number of indigenous artists from around the world collaborating on a live dance performance that was enabled through open source software and telecommunications, primarily using Skype in that realm. And like, this is rapidly becoming an area of focus. 2 weeks previous, the National Arts Center here in Canada hosted something called the Green Rooms. They had been going through a project, or they've been in a project called The Cycle for a number of years, where they've been looking at specific topic areas as they impact the arts in two-year cycles. And this 2 weeks ago culminated the last of three cycles that they're currently planned, and a two-year process of looking at specifically theater and climate change. And it had originally been envisioned, one, to this, there's a problematic within especially theater around touring and moving that type of work around, whether or not it's music or theater or dance, et cetera, that there's a huge carbon impact of moving the arts around for people to experience it. And we see that with large festivals. It's a question that we have in an area of research that we've had. So that event was actually originally planned to have eight different sites, six in Canada, two internationally, one in the UK and one down in New Zealand, that would host small gatherings of people that could be connected so that people didn't feel like they had to, for primarily a Canadian conversation, that they didn't have to fly across the country, over the ocean, et cetera, to try and reduce the carbon footprint, even though there is a carbon footprint to the all the streaming that's happening to the servers and the energy required for that, but to look at a reduction there. That had to shift dramatically from this eight-site sort of hub-spoke model where those sites were connected to a fully online format. So what we saw was an attempt to maintain a sense of that spatiality that happened with it, but moving as much of it onto online participation as possible and trying to break down the sort of standard, what we become used to as the Zoom grid, and trying to break that down a little bit and looking at different ways of engaging in performance sharing, whether or not that's musical or dance, whether or not that's sharing video, whether or not that's live, whether or not that's trying to co-create something with a couple hundred people at one point on that one platform, and really trying to find the edges of that.
Ian Garrett will speak on sustainability and the arts on two webinars being presented by the Boulder County Arts Alliance. The first one this evening, the next one next Tuesday. And you can find out more at bouldercountyarts.org.
Support comes from Outworld Brewing, reinventing the brew pub experience through sci-fi fantasy themes. Located in between Highway 287 and I-25 on Highway 119 in Longmont. A culinary and craft brew experience, now available for takeout with curbside pickup. Learn more at outworldbrewing.com.
Now, we're having some technical difficulties with the comment line this morning, so you won't get to hear it today, but it will be back next Tuesday. And you can call 303-447-9911 anytime and leave a message.